Good morning, it is I, Chris Abraham, Chris Cast, Season 2, Episode 29. I was a teenage commando. See ya after the message. Good morning, good morning, good morning. My name's Chris Abraham, and I am a podcaster. And this is episode 29 of Chris Cast Season 2. And today's story is about, it's a ramble, it's a rant, I don't have any notes, so we'll see how well I do. But the title is, I Was a Teenage Commando. So, when I was 6, my parents decided to move to Hawaii because of some bad business decisions that my dad made, which coincided with the fact that he didn't want to live in New York City anymore, considering that a couple years earlier, the family, including me, took a holiday and went to Hawaii. And here comes a garbage truck. Man, the decibels on that thing is crazy. Anyway, so 6 years old, moved to Hawaii. And I don't know how many of you have been to Hawaii, but it's a pretty locals-only kind of state. Really locals-only kind of state. They like to have containment for their haoles. And haole is a Hawaiian word meaning... human without breath, or they thought we were ghosts when they first saw us. So we are spiritless creatures, we haoles. We are soulless creatures, and it then became translated as unwelcome visitors. And now it's just white people. So it wasn't a thing. My parents first moved to a garden apartment, kind of rent controlled kind of apartment area right across from the Salt Lake Mall and Salt Lake Shopping Center is what it was called, and then right across the street from Aliamanu Elementary School. So I was literally one road away from Safeway and one road away from elementary school. So I went to kindergarten and never been a sports kid. Like, my dad didn't play any sports. My mom didn't play any sports. My dad didn't watch any sports. So I didn't play any sports. The only thing my dad taught me to do was stuff that he learned being a Marine. He taught me how to punch with my elbows. And he taught me that when I, to fall in a tumble. So that's all the sports craft that my dad taught me. He also helped me make model rockets. And he helped me find cardboard boxes so that we could ride cardboard boxes down the side of a grassy slope. And he did teach me how to bicycle. So that's my sport from my dad, bicycling. Thank you, Dad. I still do it today. And so living in Hawaii, you know, fast forward, Aliamanu Elementary was amazing. I fell in love with one girl there. Her name was Melanie Sakai, when I should have been in love with Michelle Miao. Melanie, I think, was in love with Paul Young. And so, you know, being a haole kid was never a benefit in the dating world in Hawaii. You know, sexy and hot is race blind. It's still based on the same things like prowess, confidence, handsomeness, sports, you know, body, hair, fashion sense, and you know, aggressiveness, I guess, like not assault, but you know, willing to go ahead and just be cool, I guess that's it. Anyway, when I was approaching intermediate school, I probably would have happily gone to Ali Manu Intermediate School, although those kids, man, the girls actually had boobs in intermediate school. It kind of intimidated me, you know? That was wild, like how older, much older 7th and 8th graders looked than even 6th graders, because that's when the hormones kick in. So, but it wasn't my choice. My parents upgraded to a condominium downtown. Brand new condo. I thought it was really cool. It was right up against Punch Bowl National Cemetery. It was on Lusitana Street. And so that required, I can finish the end of sixth grade taking the bus all the way to Salt Lake, which is not that far. Really, when I look at it now, I could walk between them. But back then, it was a full-on bus ride. It was another, like, zip code. So I took the bus back to school every day. I believe I had to do a bus switch. Anyway, so I would have had to have gone to Central Intermediate School, and I was scared like crazy to go to Central. And then Central High School, man, I don't know, man. I haven't met anybody who went to Central who like is in my sphere of knowing. Like it was gonna look like a tough school to go to for a freaking Howley. Although, I mean, Central High School was right downtown in downtown Honolulu. So like how could it have been? But anyway. I was intimidated out of it, so I convinced my parents to send me to private school. And over the course of choosing private schools, maybe my pop said he would pay if I went to a Catholic school. So I don't remember. I remember taking tests and stuff, and I remember getting into St. Louis. And I remember taking tours of Iolani and Punahou, and I remember being told, try again, ninth grade. So I ended up being a seventh grader at St. Louis. And I don't think seventh and eighth graders were allowed to join ROTC. I don't remember how it all went, but I think that once we hit ninth grade, we had a lot more choices. And I think those in choices included band, rifle team, PE, and ROTC. So I started with rifle team, you know, got pretty good. They had bolt action 22 caliber. I remember pretty good target shooting rifles. And I believe that they had peep scopes, if I recall correctly. They were pretty good setups. But for whatever reason, you know, once we got into ROTC, got into color guard, got into spit and polish, this club came around, Sergeant Major. I just called him Sergeant Major, but he it was either him or maybe he was just cool or try it out, or maybe I noticed that every Thursday Wednesday when everybody had to wear their ROTC uniforms, which included, you know, Class A's and patent leather shoes and envelope hats, I realized that there were, and that was despicable, right? It was so uncool that every Thursday, was it, you wore military wear, right, with your rank and your envelope hat that you put under your epaulet or in your pocket or whatever when you were indoors or in class, and wore your lid, wore your cover when you're outside, that whole thing. patent leather shoes and long pants. Although you could wear long, you had to wear long pants and Aloha shirts in St. Louis. So it wasn't kind of a shorts place. Anyway, I noticed that other kids were getting to wear combat boots, jump boots, paratrooper boots that they bloused their ugly slacks into. And they got to wear black berets, and they got to wear black cords on their shoulder. And they had red and blue, which was our school colors. They had flashes on that beret. And I asked about them, and they were the ROTC Rangers. And so I tried out for the ROTC Rangers and became a ROTC Ranger freshman year. And did I do it for 1, 2, or 3 years? I do not remember. But it was the time of my life. I don't even know why I ended up leaving ROTC Rangers at all, ever. Maybe the lure of being a sports kid and wrestling was the thing to do. But man, they literally trained you to be a commando. Like, if I had gone into the military, which I never actually intended on doing, most of my friends that went through the JROTC Ranger Club training ended up becoming JSOC level commandos themselves, right? Mike is Marine Force Recon, and everybody got their jump wings and all kinds of other stuff. So if it wasn't for me LARPing, like, I don't know, there was an intense ethos in my house of being extremely anti-war, to the point where years later, when America invaded Iraq for the first Gulf War, my dad called me from Hawaii saying that if there was going to be a draft, he would help me draft dodge by moving us to French Samoa or French Tahiti to avoid the draft for me, because he didn't want to see me go to war. So, anyway, back to Ranger Club. So, once you became a bona fide Ranger, you were entitled to upgrade from the envelope cover to actually wearing a black beret. And with the black beret, you were able to wear a black cord on your shoulder. And it was really cool. You know, you got to wear jump boots that you had to spit polish before Thursday and during any time at you know, field exercises. And you responded to a different chain of command. You responded to the Ranger commander. And the entire time I remember being in the Rangers, maybe I left after Charles Among and Eric O graduated. Did they graduate a year before me or 2 years before me? Anyway, and then when was wrestling season? I'm gonna find out. Hey Google, when is high school wrestling season? High school wrestling season customarily runs from October or November to March. So that basically means that must have been 17. Because I wasn't 16. Was I 16 or was I 17? I don't remember. It's not very clear. I need to look in my yearbooks. But until I became a wrestler, which was terrible for me, because it actually taught me how to run recreationally. But, man. So Charles Among was my commander. Eric O was my assistant commander. And those guys, they made a man out of me. They under their tutelage, I dropped, you know, must have been 50 pounds, 30, 20 pounds. became an amazing battlefield stud. I don't even remember what rank I got to. Was I a sergeant? I don't remember. But whatever it was, I really loved it. And the thing that was crazy about Rangers is that it was a full-time job outside of high school, right? So the biggest thing is that we would have all of these field trips, and all these field trips were absolutely don't ask, don't tell. They were 100%, I know what that means, but it was completely the first rule of ROTC Rangers is that you don't talk about ROTC Rangers. And the thing that was really crazy about ROTC Rangers is that we couldn't tell anybody, because it was a simple field trip. We couldn't tell anybody that what we're actually doing on these field trips were running around East Range on Oahu and firing blank adapted M16s and M60s and fake mines, fake claymores at Army National Guard, Army Reserve, and we were doing training with Marine Force Recon Reserve, and we were spending our spring breaks at Air Assault School. Air Assault, not aerosol, like as in spray, but Air Assault School. There's an Air Assault School on Oahu, and we were taught to rappel out of Blackhawks, and we took flights in Blackhawks, and we did push-ups on red logs, and we did Ranger Down, which is when one person drops for push-ups, everybody drops and push-ups when out of solidarity. We would do these amazing training missions where we would have to put one of our men into a kit, like into a onto a stretcher, and we would have to take them, you know, I don't know how many miles, but we would have to bring them back in one piece through ingenuity, I assume, and teamsmanship. And then there were those weekends, man. From Friday afternoon, 3 or 4 o'clock, a giant eggshell white bus would come with the blacked out windows that were common in those days, and maybe these days when it comes to moving troops around. And they would pick us up. We would bring our Alice pack full of stuff. We would have, we would be fully kitted. I remember admiring Charlie Among, because we were non-traditional forces. So while we were issued battle dress uniforms, we were issued BDUs for those weekends. All of us went to the local surplus store in Waikiki and spent hundreds of dollars on getting kitted up with stuff like ripstop, slant pocketed Vietnam era OD, uniforms and tiger stripe, full on tiger stripe uniforms, and some people would even play with British uniforms and other types of crazy stuff like that. And we all wore boonie caps, which are bush hats, which are basically military style surplus bucket hats, as you know them maybe. And we would put, I guess it's blackface, but we put camouflage all over our face, little compact that we would get at the surplus store with black, green, and brown, put that all over our face, and we would go stand in line with our berets and our boonie caps and our regular caps with cat eyes in the back, you know, the regular kind of 1980s, 1990s version of either the camouflage one, or we would get to go with our slant pocket OD fatigues. We'd get the regular build army caps, and we would have our moms, or we would sew little squares of green you know, what is that called? Glow-in-the-dark green cat eyes, which, you know, are used by rangers. Since we thought we were rangers, we wore as close to ranger things so that the cat eyes would let people, you know, that you were friendly in front of you. This is way before anybody had night vision goggles. Man, it was over the top. I wish I had gotten one of those crazy military haircuts, you know, high, like super high and super tight, but through most of my ROTC days, my hair was regular. What else? Man, I worshipped Charles Amung. He was the older brother I never had. I'm an only child, and he and Eric O. We would the weekends we weren't doing so what we did is we did what is called Op 4. And I will tell you all about Op 4 after the message. Welcome back to episode 29 of ChrisCast. I'm talking about I Was a Teenage Commando. So we did this thing called Op 4, and that's what that is what the Army calls opposing force. And we started off going out and doing these Op 4 campaigns, and they would give us rubber AKs, rubber AK-47s, and they would give us fake Russian papers, and they would make us run around, and the Army scouts, who are the reserve scouts, who are all retired, or, you know, they were not retired, they were active combat Vietnam vets, special forces vets and scout vets that were then used as scout reserve people, and they were so badass. But we'd run around with these really heavy rubber AKs and these Russian passports, and we were told to only say our name, rank, and serial number. So in preparation for these opposition force outings to East Range, like I said, Rangers was a full-time job. So every day after school, there was a thing called the back range of our high school, which was undeveloped at that time and was basically all trees. And it was up a hill behind the tennis courts. It was the closest thing we had to wilderness. And frickin' A, Charles Amung taught us silent movement. He taught us camouflage. He would make us jump up and down and use and you know, make sure that everything was taped down so we wouldn't make any noise. He would rigorously run us through PT every day. He would make us do both regular runs as well as rucks. And rucks are basically fully in BDU plus boots with a full Alice pack on. He would make us hump. Which is to say, go up into that wilderness with our full camouflage. So we got used to the weight on us, because when we were on East Range, 80% of the time we'd be rucking with our Alice packs. 20% of the time we'd be doing operations, and we'd, you know, drop our stuff somewhere, hide it in sort of a bivouac. And, is that a right word? Anyway, in a little encampment, and then we'd go. We would go into the JROTC classrooms, and we'd get the overhead projector, and he would run us through the identification of friendly versus unfriendly military vehicles and Air Force, planes, jets, helicopters. We would have to look at the profiles of an Abrams tank versus a Russian tank. At that point, there were only Jeeps. There were no Humvees at all in 1984, 85, 86, 87. He would make us buy the Ranger manual, which is, you know, an official Ranger guide to teach you every operational skill that a Ranger's required. And he would also give us, you know, all the other type of Ranger guides, air assault guides. Like, you can find them on Amazon. They're all there. They teach you how to improvise explosives. They teach you how to do L ambushes. They tell you how to move troops. They tell you what kind of training you need to do, what kind of PT you need to do, the expectations for run speeds. Like, we basically read that as our toilet literature. We were so committed because we knew every weekend we would be going out into the bush, and eventually we were given real M16s. We were given real M16s with full auto, semi-auto, and safe, full auto M16s. And since I was the biggest guy, I was 6'2", 6'3", it was my responsibility to be the pig man. So I was literally at 15, 16 years old, issued an M60A1 machine gun and given an assistant gunner who would carry asbestos mitts and extra barrels. And we would run around with huge bandoliers of extra 7.62 ammunition. That was why they said they called me. My nickname in ROTC was Duga. And they say that was because my M60, unlike the pap of the M16s, which I never got to really carry. I did a bunch, but my 7.62 NATO rounds went duga, 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 duga. More like dump, 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 dump. So they called me Duga, but I think they called me Duga because I was a Duga. I was a total Dug. They called me Abe, called me Abe Baby. Abe Baby was my nickname. Brosif, because Abraham, you know, Broham. Nobody called anybody by their first names. It was always Among and O and, you know, Court. But, you know, it was really good. It was so, so nice to have a family of cool dudes. And it was our secret, right? It was totally our secret. If any of the parents ever knew that we were out on East Range, I mean, they should have known something, because we would literally be awake all weekend long from Friday night until we'd sleep well Friday night. Friday night, we would generally be at, generally be set up at an encampment or in dormitories. And then first light of Saturday, we would be up until Sunday afternoon. Maybe we did it Saturday night, but I don't think that most of the National Guard people who are being trained would be available or up or accessible at that time. So our job was to disrupt supply chain. That was our 100% job. While all of our M16s and M60s had blank adapters, we did not use mile systems, so it was not about beep, 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 beep. It was not a laser system where it wasn't laser tag. There's a form of laser tag that the military does in order to see who dies and so forth. But the thing is that that's not that wasn't the thing that we normally do. We did that a bunch of times, but what we really did more often than not was we just used the blank adapters, and we used our M16s and M60s and our bang grenades, not you know, our MIC, our fake Claymore mines, to really to F with the National Guard and Army Reserve guys, because they most of their jobs, like we there was no way that we were really every time we went up against the scouts or the Marine Reserves or anything like that, they like pawned us, they pwned us every single bloody time before we knew what was going on. They had us in chairs, they had us riot cuffed into chairs, they were interrogating us, they were making us pee our pants, they were making us cry daddy, they were it was really brutal. Like some of those, I got caught once by a scout and he brought me in there and he literally put his boot into my chest and kicked my chair over. I thought I had done really well, but apparently because I'm plausible deniable and because I was supposed to be an insurgency team, a teenage insurgency team, I wasn't even supposed to even say that I had a name, rank, or serial number. So I failed. I should have just kept my mouth shut, but it was so cool, man. I mean, to walk around as a 16-year-old with an M60A1 is just freaking crazy. That's the machine gun, to put a picture in your head. That's the machine gun that Rambo is pictured with, you know, where he's holding it all by himself. That is not how I should have had pictures taken. You know, there aren't any pictures of us doing this because it was so verboten. We were so not allowed to do that kind of thing for fear that I mean, our sergeant major was had told us that if we, you know, that snitches make, you know, snitches get stitches, and that if any of our moms knew that when they signed our release form to go to a ROTC field trip, we were actually using lethal weapons and putting ourselves in extreme peril. When you sleep deprive a bunch of adults by going ahead and sneaking around at from zero dark 30 until daybreak, you know, going ahead and doing assaults on their on where they sleep and doing L ambushes on 2.5 ton trucks when these soldiers are trying to get back from training and they're tired and they want to go back to the barracks, and you're going ahead and starting assaults on them, and they've got to leave the truck, and they've got to defend themselves, and they've got to protect themselves. And one time, the 2.5 ton truck rolled off into a ditch, and I believe that someone was superficially injured, and but that's just, you know, that's just the way it was. One of the best memories I remember was training with the Force Recon Reserves, which is a special operations force of the Navy, and they're stationed on Oahu, and we got to work with them. And to make a comparison, most of the let me take a break.
Oh, thank you.
Back to the Force Recon Reserve guys. So, like, the National Guard and the reserves, man, they were pretty casual. They were not true believers. They had it was a time of peace ever since 75. There was no war. It was pretty safe time. So they had it pretty well. Like, they're paying, it was paying for school. It was subsidizing their income. They were being patriots, and, you know, and it's expensive to live in Hawaii. So everybody signs on, and people would smoke pot, and they would, you know, they would fuck around, and they would mess around, and they would hang out with us. And so esprit de corps was pretty low, and people were joking. And I know that some of our Rangers would smoke pot with the reservists and the National Guard guys, and some of them even knew each other. Sometimes we're out there and the guys saw their uncles and their, like, you know, older brothers and stuff like that. So it was really casual, but not with the Force Recon Reserve guys, man. They thought we were terrible. They thought we had the most terrible esprit de corps. They thought we were casual. They thought we didn't have any what is the term? Esprit de corps. They didn't believe that we had any pride in how we dressed, how we acted. They thought that we, how dare we, we're good Catholic boys, and we had dirty mouths on us, and we cursed and talked shit and BS'd, and they wanted, they were either having us on or they were expecting a higher level of discipline. And it was awesome. We got to do beach training. And since I was the only person, the entire Rangers, who was a dive master, I was the queen of the ball. I knew how to scuba dive. I was a fierce swimmer. And our training was amazing. We'd go out in inflatables, like you see in, like, the, you know, the frickin' Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine videos. You go into Zodiacs and inflatables. You're taught how to come into a beach, when you come in with your inflatables. Oh, come on. When you come in with your inflatables by dark of night, in your BDUs, leave everybody. Oh, come on, brother. Jeez, what are you, crazy? What are you doing, brother? BDUs go really dark when they're wet, right? So what you need to do is you do a triangulation of the shore, but you can't do that unless you have someone with flashlights from the shore to help you go in. So what each inflatable would do is find the strongest swimmer to go under to kick in the BDUs. And while going in, you do a full reconnaissance of the water going in to make sure that there's no mines or people or punjis or barriers or blockades or anything like that. You completely sweep the shoreline as the scout, and then you low crawl up onto the beach, and the moment you reach the waterline, you roll in the sand to cover your black, dark BDUs with sand, and then you low crawl up to the tree line or to the brush line. And at that point, you take out your waterproof light. At that point, it was like one of those L flashlights, those surplus L flashlights that, you know, you can either use with red light or with white light. And they were incandescent bulbs, not LEDs. And then you and your other guy up on the shoreline, about, you know, 100 yards apart, can signal in your assault team and your Force Recon beach assault team, and they can triangulate where they are based on the lights that you, who've single-handedly, as point man scout, So you did a first sweep. You made sure that the shoreline was safe by offering yourself up to a hail of bullets, and then you can make it easier for that assault team to come in using the triangulation, the 2 points of your lamps on the from the cover of the tree line. So that's what we did over and over. We practiced rolling in sand. We practiced high and low inflatables carry. We practiced, all of us got to practice things like survival by taking off your BDUs, cinching, using the cinches at the cuffs of your BDUs, and cinching your BDUs as a flotation device, all kinds of cool stuff. That was definitely the coolest training session that we got to spend an entire weekend being berated by what garbage people we were by the Force Recon Marines. And my dad was a Marine, so I know that esprit de corps is hugely important, and pride in body, self, appearance, and behavior. But I never thought it was actually true. And maybe they were taking the piss out of us. I'll ask one of my ROTC brothers. Ended up becoming a Force Recon Marine himself. So I should ask him whether they were taking the piss or whether there's higher standards in the Corps. Anyway, last break and then a goodbye, and we'll talk to you soon. Hey there, my name is Chris Abraham. This is episode 28 of ChrisCast. My name is Chris Abraham, and now we're saying goodbye. And it's gonna be sad to say goodbye. I don't know what I missed. Next time I talk about this, I will include more names. I just included Charles Among and Eric O and Peter Court, but aside from that, there were a lot of cool people. Anyway, my name's Chris Abraham. I'm Chris at abraham.su. You can reach me at +1 202-352-5051 via WhatsApp or text. You can call me at 202-352-5051. But if I don't recognize your number, please leave a message, because otherwise I won't return your call and I'll ignore it. And if you don't leave a message, I'll even block your number. What else? ChrisAbraham.com is my HQ. Anchor.fm/ChrisAbraham is my podcast HQ. If you search one word, CHRISCAST, anywhere on Google or Bing, you'll be able to find me, though there's another Chris Spacecast. I'm at Chris Abraham on Twitter, at Chris Abraham on Instagram. I am LinkedIn.com/in/ChrisAbraham. I am YouTube.com/ChrisAbraham. I am at Chris at No Agenda Social. And I think that might be it. Am I missing one? Anyway, love you guys. Talk to you soon. Mahalo. Aloha. Nui loa. Ciao. Auf Wiedersehen. A biento.